Welcome to the Education and Empowerment Podcast. In this show, our hosts explore success and advancement through education by interviewing today's top leaders in the fields of education, business, and technology in order to provide insight into what it really takes to succeed. This show is brought to you by Forestay, a SaaS-enabled online booking marketplace for student and intern housing. Forestay provides turnkey, all-in-one, cloud-based accommodation software solutions for colleges, universities, and organizations. Learn more at offcampus.forestay.com and landlords.forestay.com. All right, let's get into the show.
You're tuned to Education and Empowerment Podcast. This is your host, Bahtir Rasoyev, and in today's episode, I will be interviewing Mr. Thomas Torres-Gill. Mr. Thomas Torres-Gill has worked with international students since 2006 and at Peralta Community College District since 2008. At Peralta Community College District, Mr. Thomas has held initiatives that include opening a dedicated Berkeley City College International Office, converting the international student application to a 100% digital process, and launched OpenCCC's International Student Application Portal. As the director of the office, Mr. Thomas develops marketing and recruitment strategies, F1 student advising policies and guidance, retention strategies, and serves as the PDSO. The goal of the office are to improve and enhance Peralta Community College District's international student experiences on campus and in the community. At this Peralta Community College District, Mr. Thomas has worked as an international student support specialist, program manager, and now as a director. Mr. Thomas holds Master of Arts in Latin American and Iberian Studies in 2008 from University of California, Santa Barbara, as well as a Bachelor of Art in History with minor in Spanish. In 2003, Mr. Thomas studied at La Universidad de Chile in Santiago as an exchange student. In this episode, Mr. Thomas and I will be discussing the best practices of technology transformation in community colleges in America. This episode will give you a much better understanding of the type of challenges community colleges face and what technological advancement could help transform student success programming in these colleges. All right, let's get started. Hello, and welcome to Education and Empowerment Podcast. This is your host, Bahtir Rasoyev, and today I'm joined by Mr. Thomas Torres-Gill, and we're going to talk about the best practices of technology transformation in community colleges. Without further ado, Mr. Thomas Torres, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
That's awesome. That's great. And as we kind of start, I guess I wanted to have a chance to get to know you a little bit better. You certainly do a lot of great things, but I was hoping that you could tell us a little bit about how you got into the field of international student services and scholar empowerment.
Sure. I'd be happy to talk about it. I sort of fell into this field over a decade ago when I was applying to graduate schools. I was just looking for a place that I could be an RA and live for free while going to school at UC Santa Barbara. And I ended up working at Education First International in Santa Barbara as an RA, but also as an admin assistant and even teacher during the summer. And I really enjoyed working with those students in that program. It was such a wonderful place. And it reminded me of my time studying abroad as well. And when I completed graduate school, I intentionally sought to work with international students while I was also looking at EOPS programs. But I wanted to target higher education and working with international students. I was fortunate enough in 2008 to land a job as the International Student Support Specialist at the Peralta Community College District. And I have been here for the last 13 years, working as the advisor and then as a program manager and now as the director of the program.
That's amazing. And what we do at the Education Empowerment Podcast, we explore the idea of student success and student success outside of classroom. And in that regards, I was hoping you can tell us a little bit more about when you were traveling abroad and studying abroad, what student success meant to you then versus now when you're in the field and doing so many amazing things?
Yeah, that's a great question. And to put in perspective where my mind was at when I was studying abroad, I just turned 21. It was my first time out of the country and I studied in Chile for a year. And for me, student success at that time was more about your journey for yourself. And education was a key part of that and figuring out what it is you wanted to do. But having those experiences and really understanding more about who you are, where you're from, and what this world is. As I am now in this profession, I have a slightly different perspective. And I think all of those pieces are incredibly true. Every student has their journey, but I think that's the part of it. Like my experience for success is different than what other students might have defined for themselves as successful. And so I've come to see that every student that comes through our doors, they might be here to learn ESL for a semester or two. They might be here for a certificate or to transfer to university or to prepare for graduate school. And each of those students, their success is really defined by themselves, what they want to get out of their experience and get out of our education. I've taken that approach as an advisor of asking them what do they want to do? What do they find successful? How do they want to measure that? And we really let them dictate those terms. And our goal is just to advise them on how to best meet those goals or make sure they're aware of the different resources and opportunities along the way.
That's amazing. And the whole notion of community colleges is a little bit different, and especially for, you know, international students and scholars. Sometimes they compare community college to like a vocational school in most of the countries. And that's one of the challenges of explaining international students what community college is in the United States and how important that is. And I was hoping that maybe you can tell us a little bit more about what kind of challenges do you see in community colleges as it comes to the work that you do and as it comes to the work of like student success outside of classroom?
Yeah, it's community colleges are a unique concept. There are a handful globally, but I mean, it's a handful. It's not community college system is just not really what's known across the world. And there are some amazing community colleges in the United States and California that have done an exceptional job of promoting that brand and their brand in particular, but the notion of going to a community college to start. And some of the challenges we have is what you just outlined. Are we a vocational school? The word college, it's translated to Spanish, is colegio, which is high school. So it also makes people feel uncertain about what it is they're signing up for.
Right.
In California, we're incredibly fortunate. While there's 120 plus community colleges in our state,
right,
which can make it difficult to really highlight like your differences, we all have guaranteed transfers to the CSU and to the UC system, and not to the UC Berkeley, UCLA, and UC San Diego, but students who come through our doors are guaranteed transfer into those institutions with some limitations, but they are guaranteed in for their third and fourth year. And really trying to meet with parents, with students, and not just demonstrate that this is a cost-effective, more personal and intimate way to begin your university-level coursework, but that there's that guaranteed transfer. It's tough to sell in that sense. Now, it's not a sell, but it really is one of the best opportunities out there. And I hope more students would look at us as an option instead of going straight to the university. But My approach has always been, if you want to go straight to university, you should. If you can afford it, it's expensive, of course, but you get a lot of value out of having lived on the dorms and meeting your classmates from freshman year on. But our classes are equivalent, and we have the same first and second year sequence as the university does, which is why the whole transfer program works the way it does. So it's been a challenge to promote the brand, but there are some amazing individuals outside of the U.S. who understand the value of a community college and are able to communicate that effectively to people in country.
That's amazing. I want to go to the question of universities. And when international students and scholars think of university, again, Stanford and Harvard and all the big names. And I know that California is a very attractive destination, especially with the fact that it attracts some of the most best talent who come to Silicon Valley and Orange County. And so, but when you look at the whole system, as you mentioned, there are a lot of benefits to studying at a community college for many different reasons. And I'm personally very excited to be partnering with your institution. And I was hoping that you could tell us a little bit more about the work that you do at the Peralta Community College District and what are some of the highlights you have there that makes your institution unique.
I haven't mentioned this yet, but our community college district has four of those 120 plus community colleges. And the one that's most known is Berkeley City College because of the name. It's right next to UC Berkeley, but followed by Laney College, which is our biggest campus. And it was featured on Netflix's Last Chance U recently. Oh, yeah. So it's a lot. Football season. So if you haven't seen it, it's a great show. It does really show a lot of Oakland, both sides, but it also demonstrates the real opportunity. And so we are in such a great spot location-wise that we have a lot of students coming to San Francisco and transferring over. And our program understands that we have a pretty big demand for students who are looking to go from Berkeley City College to UC Berkeley in particular. But UC Davis is right up the road, and we have a lot of students going there, along with SF State and CSU East Bay. Our program is really designed to make sure students that are navigating through us feel all the support that they can get, as well as make sure that we are like really the person, the team that's holding their hand through this process. But going through a four community college system can be a little difficult, where each campus right. can do something slightly differently. And so we're really the hub. We put on lots of activities and events. We also coordinate the study abroad programs that our faculty lead outside awesome. Of the US. And we do lots of different things for our students when we're in normal times. Of course, we had been doing graduations. We do transfer fairs, International Education Week. We take them to Tahoe and Jeunesse Park. So we awesome. Do a ton of different things with our students, with our wonderful advisors and teams. So it's been great. And now is working with you, hopefully soon, we'll be able to provide students with more housing options. We know that is one downside to the Bay Area, is it can be a little expensive to live.
Right.
Hopefully identifying economic ways for students to be able to live in this area so they can continue to go to school is critical. So that's why we're also in this.
Fantastic. I'm glad you mentioned that, because as we're looking at our discussion today about the innovation and technology transformation, and before we kind of get to that topic, I was hoping that for a minute you can reflect on the effects of COVID and the whole pandemic and how it changed your operations. What were your lessons learned?
That's a great question. One is our field can change quickly. If you look historically, and I started in 2008, and so I know there are many others in this field that have been here a little bit longer and remember or worked in the field when 9/11 occurred. And that's when we were issuing paper I-20s, physical paper I-20s, typing them up. But to the recession and to other SARS as well, it shows you how quickly things can change. When you read the NASA reports, you can see how data has shifted over the last number of years, even with political changes. We were in the best position as we could have been in when the pandemic hit. And we have learned that even if we're in a pandemic, there's still a lot we can do for our students. We can right. still transition digitally. We can still reach out to them in a variety of ways. But also we can improve what we're doing in the office, even if we don't have the same amount of volume as we used to. Instead of spending majority of our time advising students, which we still do the majority of our time advising our students, but there has been some more time opened up. And that's where we're looking at changes and improvements to what we're doing and how we might keep those changes in the future when we return to whatever our new normal might look like.
That's great. And I was looking at some reports the other day through Inside Higher Ed, and I learned that $40 billion is being injected into higher ed. And I think Senate approved it. And there's a debate going on whether the funds will be available for international students and scholars as well. So there is a hope to what the future is like. And I was hoping that on that note, you can tell us a little bit more about what specific technological advancements have you done or continue looking to do to make community colleges better and your system better in specific?
Yeah, and just to backtrack a little bit, our office has always been a lot more willing to use technology maybe over other community colleges. I know there's some ones that do that have their own system and work flawlessly and in sync. We are not quite at that level, but we are pretty close to it. In California, for students, they can do the OpenCCC application, but they also have an OpenCCC international application that colleges can coordinate with the state chancellor's office and open up. And we did that a couple of years ago. Before that, though, we implemented Teradata software. So we use Teradata software to do all of our admissions. So we've been processing admissions digitally prior to the pandemic, and we would require some in-person documents, but now obviously we are just having them upload everything. And so we've synced those pieces up before this pandemic, and that made a world of difference. Our reduced course load requests can be submitted through Teradata as well. And so we hit the ground running, and we were using Teams and Zoom for our staff meetings irregularly, but we had been practicing using that. And so once the pandemic hit, or once it became clear, like things were probably on their way to shut down, it was a matter of does everyone have what they need at home, as opposed to how do we get them what they need at home and what are we going to use when they get it? So we were a little ahead, and at least in my mind. And so when we did go to working from home in March last year, we had a Zoom meeting where we had a few hundred international students and parents and those who got the link attend the first week we were closed to talk about this shutdown and what was happening. Right. And we quickly utilized bookings through Microsoft. We have the Microsoft Office package. We have bookings up. Students can make an appointment with an advisor and they can meet them via Zoom. We changed our orientation to fully online. We watched a wonderful presentation by College of San Mateo District and CCSF. And I believe there was one more. I'm sorry if I can't remember who they were, but they use Canvas for their online orientation. So we quickly developed and got that going out. We hoped that it would have been ready last fall, but we got it ready for the spring. There was still some testing to do. And then we've also have our guided self-placement online as well. We really transitioned more online as much as we could to help facilitate some of the major roadblocks that we saw. For instance, how can a student enroll in class? Well, they have to take the placement exam. And now that's online, but we got it for our program specifically in conjunction with one of the campuses, Laney College. And so we really had that foundation, and now we've been able to build on it, which has been incredibly helpful for our students and our team. And now we're just really looking at how can we continue to use these tools, or which tools are most effective for us.
That's great. I'm glad you mentioned about the tools, because I think as you're looking at the work that all of us do in the field of student success outside of classroom, I mean, and as you mentioned, the whole thing about like booking it online is so easy. And that's kind of the transformation that we're building through Forestay, is allowing students to book housing options online. Whereas in the past, we had to go actually look at the apartment, get a tour. And now there's a lot of 3D tours and kind of looking at your listings online before you come in. So it really helps students and parents and agents and, of course, the institution to focus on what's most important. The question that I have is, what is going to be most important in terms of like what technological best practices are going to be important moving forward, as it relates to like the question of student success work that we are doing? I mean, again, there's a lot about, as you mentioned, there's Canvas, there's so many other technological solutions that are out there for in-classroom learning. But I think when you look at the overall statistics, a lot of the transpersonal transformation happens when students do work outside of the classroom. And this is a very important topic. Do you mind shedding some light on that?
Well, to talk about best practices, I mean, there's so many different tools out there and apps, and it can be overwhelming. One thing we're trying to learn is, do students want to be able to have the option of a virtual advisor appointment once we're done with this? And overwhelmingly, they're all saying yes, or maybe. There's been one that said no, and that's totally fine. But the majority of students are, and at least in our colleges, and again, we have four colleges, they're able to take a class at Merritt and Berkeley at once. But to go from Merritt all the way to our international office can be a long journey. It could take an hour. And then if they have another class, they have to go back. So they might be limited in when they can actually meet us before COVID. And so we're looking at integrating a lot of these tools later on when they come back, and figuring out which ones right now are really working and which ones are not. Trello, which is a great app to manage a program or manage a project, but it didn't really click with our team as much as I was hoping for. So we're probably not going to use that one again. We might give it a try later on. We're using HubSpot on our main homepage to track the metrics with students coming in or chatting with us. And that's one that we're going to keep. We're looking at what we're doing and how we're doing it, and trying to figure out which are the best tools. The state chancellor's office also got Cranium Cafe for everyone. And so the colleges are looking at Cranium Cafe implementing that. I've been invited to a meeting to learn about Cranium Cafe and how the colleges are going to utilize this. And that's really create like a waiting room type environment, a virtual one for students to come and knock on your door and see an advisor when you're in. And that might replace booking. So we're still learning which of these tools are going to be the most effective moving forward. I hope that all the changes that are being made constantly, that by the time we get back, we'll have a good grasp of which ones work the best for us. And also to really understand through surveying our students and those in-person interactions that I think are critical too. I don't want us to go fully digital, but those in-person interactions to better understand how these tools are impacting our students. I do think there's a huge value to in-person meetings and really making that connection. Some of our staff, like that's really what feeds them. And I know for the students too. So it's not about moving technology now fully and now we can all work from home forever. It's about finding that right balance. And every institution may have a different balance. And I think that's totally valid. It should be based on what your students are asking for, what your capacity is, and just understanding where people are.
I mean, you just mentioned something very critical here about the balance. I remember myself a year ago as the pandemic hit and prior to that, we were saying our whole office, I mean, our team was fairly small and we had like side by side, we would sit and work together. And it was a lot of like that healthy interaction and feedback. And we were kind of hoping that, hey, why don't we take one day off, let's say Friday, and then rotate, right? One day I'll work from home. And then as March hit, it put everyone at home. and it's interesting because maybe in 4 or 5 months, we got really tired sitting home, man. It's been crazy. And on the contrary, now I'd like to go to the office and have that quiet space because there's nobody right now in the office. Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned about the balance. And I'm thinking that as we kind of proceed, there's going to be access of these technological solutions and a detox might be required because it may be confusing to students too. I appreciate the comment you made about striking the right balance and identifying the sources and the solutions that work best for both all the stakeholders. And moving forward, what would you say is the biggest area of opportunity? What can we do together to create a better future for our students?
Well, everything's going to look so different when we're all back. And my wife, who's a teacher, she reminds us all, and it's true. There's a lot of trauma that different people have experienced this past year. And a lot of people have gotten sick. I mean, millions across the world. So many people have passed away. Lives have been upended financially with kids as well, being uprooted from schools and then being thrown back in, possibly part-time. There's a lot of this transition when we come back. I'm not sure how things are going to look. I don't think anyone does, but there's going to have to be some space for people to like heal and process all this. Cause even going back to whatever the new normal might be is going to be a big shift for many people. I've just spent the last year with my two little kids and I'm going to miss like having the ability to see them as much as I have been seeing them where we're able to make fresh food at home. In terms of opportunities though, the whole landscape, this whole field is going to be different. There's a lot of companies that have had to downsize, a lot of companies that may have closed, international programs that may not exist anymore because they couldn't, where were the students coming from? And if students were graduating or returning home due to COVID, what is their position? And so we're hoping that as we're in a large market, we have some popular community colleges and we have an amazing program and staff, amazing programs and staff. We're hoping that we're available for our students and there could be a lot of opportunities. We're not sure from what countries they may come from. We know there's still political tension in China, for instance, but we believe that there is this demand for higher education outside of home countries and not being able to leave a country to go and study. I think that demand is going to be pretty great. I'm hopeful that there is that demand and that we're here as an option for students who want to start, save some money at a community college and have the guaranteed transfers to the UCs. And just on that note, this is from the state chancellor's office, that nearly half of students earning a bachelor's degree from the University of California in science, technology, engineering, and math transferred from a California community college. It's a very popular route that many students take. So I'm hoping to get that word out and just really better understand the landscape and what different countries are experiencing, because it's not going to all be the same.
Do you think there will be more students coming into the country? I mean, what's the biggest fear right now?
There's no fear. The biggest obstacles, I'd say, are vaccine distribution, U.S. Embassy's ability to open up and process visas.
Right.
And just sort of the general path of COVID. In the U.S., there's that massive vaccine rollout. And I know there's some pretty high objectives, or trying to get everybody vaccinated by July 4th, or as many people as they can by July 4th. And so I'm hopeful that in the US, we will be on track to be opening up by the fall, which is what I'm hoping our colleges will be able to do. Although it looks like there might be that, the fall semester feels like it'll be that transition where we have a lot of in-person hybrid or online still. And then I'm hoping for the spring. But a lot depends on the other countries, how much access they get to vaccines, how comfortable families are sending their children outside of the country while this pandemic may still be winding down. If that new variant is able to go around or subvert these vaccines. So I think there's those obstacles, and we just have to wait and see how they play out. But we've had a lot of interest. Over this past year, students are taking classes from home while they wait to get their visa appointments. That combination to me is the biggest piece, or the biggest pieces that will determine we might see that initial bump. And then I think it'll taper before we see our traditional two-year curve to return to our regular numbers, or wherever our new regular might be.
That's great. That's great. In one of my episodes a few weeks ago, I was speaking with the chairman of Study PA, the consortium of higher education institutions in Pennsylvania. And we briefly touched on the idea of collaboration and changing the mindset from competition to collaboration and partnership. I was discussing with him the idea that the need for working together increases right now, especially where institutions are in need of some innovation to be sustainable, because as you said, there's a lot of closures, a lot of businesses like institutions. I know Concordia College swept away in New York, and a number of other colleges also either merged or downsized. What advice would you give to someone in your position, community colleges, or with any other higher education institution facing these issues now? What do they need to do? Should they work more together? Should they outsource? What advice would you give to them?
I think it always depends on like your specific like community college, your location, your logistics. I think that's a huge factor to start off with, like knowing where you really are. One of the initiatives we were about to do or looking into for the last fall was to team up with a couple of community colleges, San Mateo and Foothill De Anza, along with SF State possibly, and then UC Berkeley, and go together to a specific site or two countries and really promote the brand of community colleges to universities. That was one of our objectives prior to COVID. And that's something we're going to return to or start to explore as things begin to open up. See where everyone is. I think there's going to be an immediate need from many programs to try to return enrollments back to where they might have been originally, which I know that's one of our objectives. And hopefully those align with the other community colleges. I've never seen our community colleges as competition. I think every community college has their own advantage. And the community college concept, promoting that is more important at times than promoting your colleges, because you want students to know, like, we are one of the best options. It doesn't really matter where you go. It depends on where you want to be and what kind of experience you want to have. I went to UC Santa Barbara, so I love Santa Barbara. And Santa Barbara City College has an amazing program, too, with Carola Smith, who is fantastic. If you ever get a chance to speak with her, she's been a leader in the field for our region for a long time. But and I want students to find where they are most comfortable being, and they can start there and then come up here. They don't have to stay at one spot either. So they can start their journey at Santa Barbara City College and go to UC Berkeley, or Berkeley City College and go to UC Santa Barbara, vice versa. I think working together is key. Community colleges tend to not have as many resources, or they're not equitably distributed. There's a lot of haves and have-nots, and it makes it difficult for a larger consortium to be built where you are teaming up with universities, just because of all the different factors and dynamics between city colleges and universities and different partners that we have globally.
That's great. It brings us to, I guess, a very good note to wrap this episode. And I was hoping that you could share any piece of wisdom or a quote on student success.
That's a good one. See, I saw that and I was thinking, like, what is a good quote? But for me, I've always told students, success is how you define it. I've always recommended students put themselves, like, make a goal for yourself and put yourself on that path, but be open to whatever may come up along the way. My family likes to say, and I think it's a common quote, luck finds those that works the hardest. And I encourage all of our students to do the same. Work hard, play hard, put yourself on a path and be open to whatever may come up. There's no one way to get to a point, but just have fun while you're doing it. Enjoy the ride.
Awesome. That's cool. And that's kind of the reason, one of the reasons why we started this podcast for Stay is to empower young people to be open and to explore opportunities that are coming to them. There are so many of them. And I was hoping that you could tell us or nominate someone who should be the next guest speaker to speak about student success outside of classroom.
Well, what's funny is Corolla Smith is someone that came to mind as I was mentioning that. And I think she would be a fantastic person if she's available. But I was also in touch with Anna Saki Smith from ACE, who has also been someone I've been connected with for a couple of years now, who's doing some wonderful things with ACE. And so those two individuals would be really good to meet and talk to if you ever get an opportunity to learn all the great things they're doing.
That's great. Thank you for a nomination. For our listeners, this was an episode with Mr. Thomas Torres-Gill. It was a very useful one, and I did personally learn a lot about what you have done and what the institution has done. I hope that the best practices that you shared will be the ones that other people will use in their work. And there's a hope for collaboration. We hope and look forward to collaborating with you. And for our listeners out there, if you want to explore what ForStay does, check it out, ForStay.com. And if you want to sign up for becoming a speaker or listening more about this episodes of our podcast, check out podcast.forstay.com. And once again, until next show, Mr. Torres, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Take care.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Education and Empowerment Podcast. This show is brought to you by ForStay, a SaaS-enabled online booking marketplace for student and intern housing. ForStay provides turnkey, all-in-one, cloud-based accommodation software solutions for colleges, universities, and organizations. Learn more at offcampus.forstay.com and landlords.forstay.com.